Attention Austin guitar players and bass players. Are you in need of setup or repair on your axe? Well, I have the guy for you, gang. That's Jason Swedberg over at J. Scott Luthery, and you can find him at J. Scott Luthery on Instagram. Now, if you listen to the show, you know I've been talking about Jason for years. Why is that? Because I've been taking my guitars to Jason for over 20 years. Not only does he do the best job, but he has the best prices and the fastest service in town. Again, find him at J. Scott Luthery on Instagram. Not only is he doing an amazing job repairing and setting up guitars, he is now building guitars. That's right. He built me an SG Junior, which I have, and it sounds amazing. It feels great. It's the very first SG Junior he ever built. I've got a J. Scott Luthery SG Junior. You can go see him at J. Scott Luthery on Instagram. Get a guitar built. Get your guitars fixed. Get them set up. J. Scott Luthery on Instagram. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here?
Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys have all had a good week so far. I am still in my grandma's backyard just chilling out. You can hear the birds and the nice, it's a little warm out here. It gets a little balmy in Houston. I actually did one of today's interviews from this backyard on Zoom. Yeah, gang, I have Greg Gonzalez from the band Grupo Fantasma on the show today. They have a huge show coming up this coming Friday, May 27th at the Paramount Theater. It's the Paramount Theater presents Grupo Fantasma featuring Joe Batan. Joe Batan is this amazing Afro-Filipino dude from Spanish Harlem. He's about 80 years old now at this point. But as a kid, he growing up in Spanish Harlem, he was the leader of a Puerto Rican gang, and then he got into some trouble, went to prison for a little while, but got his shit together and got out in the mid-60s, put a band together with guys from the neighborhood, and started making this incredible music that's like a cross between Latin boogaloo and African-American doo-wop. It's quite hard to understand, but if you go look him up, Joe Batan. It's Joe, like the normal Joe name, and then B as in boy, A-T-A-A-N, two A's at the end, Joe Batan. Fantastic stuff, man. Go look it up. There's an anthology which can kind of get you into it if you want to just kind of like skim and see what his vibe is. But he's incredible, and they're doing this great show at the Paramount Theater next Friday, May 27th. You can go to GrupoFantasma.com to get tickets, or also go to tickets.austintheater.org/GrupoFantasma. We have a great conversation. It's always a great, like, I feel like whenever those guys from Grupo Fantasma come on, especially Greg Gonzalez, I feel like we get, like you guys, the audience, and me, we all get this fantastic education on some artist and style of music that we've never heard about. So this is a great conversation with Greg Gonzalez. But before we get to that, I spoke to Tom Lamb a couple of weeks ago, back in the apartment, back in Austin. He has a project, I guess. It's not a band, it's just him. It's called Neutral on Paul. And he was on like a year or two ago during the time of COVID. I remember we did a Zoom interview, and I just really fell in love with his music and his songwriting style. It's great. And his record making style is fantastic. He's like, what he does is he starts recording these records on his own and then hands them off to this guy named Taylor Tatch in Austin. If you know him in Austin, you know this guy's just fucking great. But he has a brand new album coming out. Neutral on Paul's album, Three Cheers for Vulnerability, which comes out on June 3rd. Fantastic fucking record. I really enjoyed it. I really, really enjoyed it. You can check out the single Colored Light. Great song. Great song. Also, the song Three Cheers for Vulnerability is out now. Just fantastic, fantastic songwriting. Great musician. And we have a great conversation about what he's been doing this last year since we last spoke. Always great. These guys are like almost regulars now, especially Greg Gonzalez. So before I talk to Greg Gonzalez from Grupo Fantasma, hang on while I talk to the great Tom Lamb about his latest album, Three Cheers for Vulnerability, from his project, Neutral on Paul. You can find them at neutralonpaul.com. So here's me and Tom chatting it up. Let's get down.
Yeah. prism break just right. Keep getting in the way, the glass won't bite.
Swinging, you're murdering me already.
You know what I like about you, Tom, is like you. There's like this thing now with people where it seems like everyone's constantly like doing an Academy Award acceptance on social media. You know,
hilarious.
But it's like because they're playing Wednesday at 7 somewhere.
Ah!
I want to thank all the people that helped me get to here, man. Finally realizing my dream, playing 7 o'clock at this place.
That's so
but
fun.
Like your thing, you're like, you go, yes, I'm releasing singles, whatever that means.
I know, dude. I have no clue. I'm so bad. I mean, I feel like I'm okay at writing a song at this point, but like all the other crap that goes along with it is entirely lost on me. I just have no clue. So
I had a conversation with someone that works at a label that shall remain anonymous that said that the email that they got from the person, the way that it was written, they wouldn't work with them. And I was just like, wow, they're fucking awesome though.
Yeah.
I don't care about that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is like a weird thing. It's difficult to sort of be your own champion, you know, man. And like, I'm going back to this. Let me just go back to this record. Cause this record is fucking great. Then you're a great songwriter, and this is like, I mean, the other thing is, and I know we talked about this last time, is you make the kind of music that I want to hear, so you already kind of have a leg up with me.
I dig that.
I'm not like a regular critic or anything.
Right. Well, we do. I mean, we definitely have some overlap. The stuff that you've told me to listen to, I've loved.
Yeah.
So, yeah, for sure. No, I appreciate that, man.
So this record's going to come out on the 3rd of June. Are you going to play with the band?
No plans. You know, I've done, I've got my local record shop here. I've done some in-stores with them. I have a feeling we'll put something together.
Oh yeah. Are you somewhere like Fort Worth or something?
No, I'm in Dripping Springs. Oh. I'm out west of town.
Equally
yeah. And so we have, it's going weird in a different direction than that, but yeah. We have a little record shop and they're super, super great. I love them. It's called Fourth Rock Records. And so I've done some in-stores with them and the guy who owns it, his name's Andy. He's been really cool about the music. He seems to genuinely like it. And, you know, I burn hot on affirmation. That's my currency at this point.
Is that why you booked yourself on the podcast?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I'm burning hot on affirmation, man. So I'll probably do something with him. We haven't talked much about it. I should probably call him. but he's awesome.
You worked with Taylor Tatch, and I remember in the last one you had done it via the way people were doing things in 2020.
Yeah, right on. No, pretty remotely.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I pretty much the same process where like I recorded vocals, guitars, auxiliary stuff, clarinet, random percussion, random keys, stuff like that. Send stems over to Taylor. We'd have a pretty quick conversation and then I'd just let him rock. And he was knocking out bass and drums again, some auxiliary stuff. If he'd hear a harmony that he wanted to throw on, boom. But pretty much all those vocals, I'd say 90% of the vocals are me here.
That's interesting because the record sounds really organic.
Yeah, thanks, man.
And it feels really organic.
I think he and I are super tuned in. And it almost
he's the rhythm section?
Pretty much. Yeah. And every once in a while, he'll throw a guitar track on there. He's a ridiculous guitar player. So if you're hearing something that's very impressive, it's probably Taylor. You know?
Well, you know what I'm hearing that's impressive is the songs. You know, that's what I react to. And the delivery of it, and it's really a fucking great record, man.
Thanks, dude. Yeah, no, I'm so song focused right now. It's like all I care about beyond like my babies and my lovely wife is knocking out a good song. It's just where my brain is. And that's all I want to do.
Knocking out a good baby, knocking out a good song.
Whatever, I'm out of the baby biz.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah, right. No, but that's, I mean, I just, I just want to write really, really, really good songs. And I just want to get better at it, dude.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You do? Are you still, are you still playing with Brandon Callies? I mean, what's happened since we last spoke? When we last spoke, nothing was happening. So
that's right. No, we did finally, we got our Brandon Callies Band album out, the Sunrise Diner album. So that's out on vinyl. And it turned out great. The vinyl package is killer. We should get you we'll get you a press.
I would love that.
I've got a couple here, so I'll find a way. I'm sure I'll see Swedberg in the next couple of weeks dropping off a guitar. So I'll find a way to get you a copy. But the album turned out. It's awesome. Callies killed it. And the hand-drawn packaging is killer. So he's on hand-drawn records. So we did that, and then we did like a slew of release shows, and we've been doing about once a month, which is a good speed for me. What do we have? We have June 17th, the Rail House in Kyle, which we've never played. So we're going to try that place out. And okay. That's our next like area show.
But back to your thing, like are you not wanting to do a band?
I don't know, man. It's tough. I wrestle with it. I think it would be tough on my family, and it would be tough to pull, you know how it is. It'd be hard to pull together a band and not be able to feel like you could take care of them, appropriately. If you're going to make them learn, you know, two albums worth of tracks and go slug it out a few times.
Yeah.
I would, and the harmonies, I mean, that's just such a big deal to me. Yeah. I don't know how I would find a way to convince and find three friends that want to learn all my dumb oohs and ahs, you know?
Yeah.
So that's tough.
I know. It's tough. It's tough and it's expensive. Yeah. And the thing is the kind of people that you can like that. That was always the thing. Like when I was coming up, like in the late 80s and early 90s, if your band had killer harmonies, you could tell that band rehearsed. And if the bands had endings and intros and shit, like strong endings.
Right.
Like thought out endings, not just like this ends here.
Everyone look at each other and try. No, I mean, there obviously Callies is up in like outside of Dallas. So we don't get to rehearse a ton. We get together when we play. So we're guilty of the occasional trash. But we do have tight harmonies.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that I did that last year. I put out a bunch of singles like in the spring. Yeah. And then I put together this band, and if you want to do a one rehearsal band and have the harmonies, then bro, you got to throw down some cheddar.
Yes. Dude, we went to your 310. My wife and I went to your 310 show. It was awesome. We loved it. We had a great time.
Well,
last year.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. It was beautiful. You sounded killer. Well, it sounded like a band that I'd been playing together.
Well, me and the drummer and the guitar player have been playing together a long time. And then that bass player lady, she's just massive. And she did have the iPad.
She was bad to the bone though.
Yeah.
That's Harmony Keller,
And she also, true to her name, she sang harmonies well.
Yeah. No, it was a great show.
Yeah.
I loved it. But yeah, I mean, you know, if I were to make my friends play and learn all these songs and get them to a point where I'd want to do it, it'd be an undertaking. It feels a little selfish. I don't know.
And it is a little selfish. Like that show at that place, I mean, people ended up coming and it ended up working out at a time when they didn't know if shows like that were going to work out. So it did work out.
Right.
It came out in the black and everything and everyone was happy, but I did not come out in the black.
I feel you. I feel you. It was a good show though. I mean,
it felt good to do, you know?
Yeah. If you need some affirmation currency from me, there it is. It was a good show. I liked it a lot. Well, I'd go back.
And I wanted to play a show like at a venue, like a venue.
Fuck yeah.
Like where the Fix plays and Howard Jones and shit, like Matthew Sweet, guys like that, you know?
I saw the Jayhawks not long after I saw you there, and it was killer.
With the Masters?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, it was dope. I loved it. I love the Jayhawks.
Me too,
man. It was a killer show. Yeah.
Man, so talk about killer harmonies, man. Both of those bands.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And songwriting. The songwriting is insane.
So it's just you doing the harmonies?
Yeah.
How old are your kids? Can you teach them? What about that wife? She could play bass.
She's perfect in every way. I don't know what harmonies are in the cards. The kids, I think I got one that might be able to knock some out pretty soon here. So that's not a bad idea. I should start like a staple situation.
Yeah. If I would have been smart in my 20s when I was married, I would have had a band's worth of kids.
Yeah.
Now, right now, dude, I'd have a band. No problem.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got two. We can have a power trio sooner or later, I think, maybe. That might be rad.
Well, man, your record's great. What's going on with these songs? Like, what's a song where you say, "Don't beat yourself up, kid"? I like that
man,
song.
Man, that's just, thank you. That's just me talking to my son. He, we had a parent teacher conference with his teacher right before I wrote that song. And she was like, "We need to talk about negative self-talk." And I was like, "Oh man, I got that too." And, I mean, him just giving himself a hard time. Like if he screwed something up, he'd just be mean to himself, which is, I mean, I really would love to nip that in the bud so that, you know, 35 years later, he doesn't have to write songs about that stuff. So, but yeah, that's 100% what that is. It's just me talking to my boy.
Wow. How much of that stuff informs? I mean, obviously, it really, I thought that song was you writing it about you, to be honest with you. And I guess in a way you kind of are.
Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, we are alarmingly similar sometimes. But yeah, that's just to him. But yeah, no, it's always there. I hope he can find a way to get around it.
The single that's out, Colored Light, is, man, that is a great song, man.
Thanks, man. Just, thank you so much.
That is just a great, great, great song.
Thanks, dude. I really appreciate that.
Do you do anything, like, do you push your songs to places? Like, are you, like, affiliated at least, like BMI or ASCAP or something? And
I've been doing the Submit Hub thing. I keep on having these random conversations with what seem like grifters from the United Kingdom about potentially.
Well, you know, there's a guy, you know, BMI has an office here. Not to be like a commercial, this podcast brought to you by BMI. Mitch Ballard, great dude, man. He would love your shit, man.
Really?
Yeah, okay. Just reach out to him.
Dude,
be like, hey, I'm this
guy.
I'm sure he knows Brandon.
I'm sure you're right. Brandon seems to know everyone. And, no, from an infrastructure standpoint, I'm kind of lost.
I think he'd really like your songs. And, you know, there is, you know, now we live in a world where, like, say, it would be hard on your family for you to be out rehearsing at night with some crazy band of dudes and ladies, whatever it is you have going on.
Yeah. Yeah. I've kind of been looking for, and so the grifter conversations that I keep on having with guys from the UK is about, you know, trying to find some kind of think relationship. I don't know how to get there.
Well, you think to yourself, like, impossible. Oh, just even just that part of that song where you're saying, "Don't beat yourself up, kid," you know, for a while in the song, like that, you know, that would be great in a movie or a show or something.
Dude, people tell me that. You're one of them. I appreciate it. I would love to find a way to get it there.
Too bad I'm not in charge of, like, music for movies and television.
I'll take your affirmation currency right now. For now, it's good.
Oh, dude, talk to me about that crazy piano and unsettling. What is that, Taylor? Or is that you?
No, that's me. And that was
see?
The first song.
There you go.
Yeah. Thanks, brother. That was the first song we... in my initial thinking of that song, and I love that song, and I have a hard time saying I like anything I do. That's probably my favorite song on the album.
I like it a lot, but, too. It's great.
Thanks, brother. So I was initially thinking of that as being just like a 1 minute transitionary songlet, kind of like Ben Folds 5 did, like the Fred Jones, the cigarette song on Whatever and Ever Amen. It's like a 1 minute song and it just kind of feels like a doorstop or something like that. And so my idea was for it to be that super lo-fi. And then, I handed it to Taylor and he ran the vocals through a Leslie speaker. And man, it just feels a little bit like, it sounds a little bit like you're underwater and I love it so much.
So great.
And, but it's just the vocals through the Leslie. And I fell in love with it the second he sent it back to me. And then from there, that getting that record back from him, was just like, oh shit, I want to run. I want to make another album and knock it out. And so we did. So I've been sitting on it for like 6 or 7 months, just kind of having it in my back pocket. done.
So what was your piano was slightly out of tune, and then you compressed the fuck out of it?
That's exactly right.
God, there's just nothing cooler than that sound in the world, dude.
I know. Yeah, it's no, like piano behind me.
It's like the dun 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 dun. That Rolling Stones song, "She Comes in Colors."
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's like a rainbow or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But no, that's this piano right behind us.
Yeah.
This piano was my wife's grandmother's piano, and so apparently she was playing it in like a theater in like I guess the '50s. I can't remember exactly what the story was. And so she's from out in West Texas in Big Spring. We had the opportunity to bring it back. So we brought this piano back in the back of a truck and like yanked it out. And of course, you know, the trip, I mean, it sounded terrible. And so I've had a really hard time keeping in tune and I've kind of given up. And it's kind of awesome because sometimes you can do like a little lead line like that one in that an unsettling song.
So
and it just
great.
Feels, it just feels like something completely I don't know. There's some weird tension to it, you know? Anyway.
It's my favorite sound on the album, is that piano.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm like, up there. I'm with you.
Like I had it playing and I came running into the room to see what that song was. What the fuck? And I started it over. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, there's some weird ones. Amanda, my wife, got me a theremin for Christmas a couple of years ago. So that's on the album in a handful of spots.
Like an actual theremin?
Yeah.
Boy, I bet that's annoying to fucking have to live with someone that's learning that instrument.
There's no learning, man. You just plug it in and go. I don't really know.
Oh, yeah.
And it's out in the garage, which is good. And I've got a cigar box guitar that my buddy gifted me.
Oh, cool.
So anything that I can get a hold of, I'm going to try to find a way to squeeze it into a record. There's clarinet on the album again. Yeah, literally anything that I can find, I'll use. So it's a little arrogant, but that's... If you give me something that makes noise, I'm going to figure something out.
It may not
be right.
Yeah.
That's just kind of where my brain goes.
Yeah, mine too. That's my favorite thing to do. I'd rather have, you know, an Omnicord than a Stradivarius. You know what I mean?
Yeah. 1,000,000%. And if you don't really know how to use it, that's when something interesting can happen.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like, the more I'm writing songs, I don't have a ton of music theory. I have a little bit, but I honestly feel like the little bit of incremental music theory that I get is quashing whatever real creativity is left in my brain. You know what I mean?
It's like
it hits a grid in the same way like you know, a drum track hits a grid and then everything just turns
right
vanilla.
Well, it's those, you know, those really cool late 70s records that Bowie and Eno did. They would buy these synthesizers and throw away the manual and just try and figure out how to use it.
Yeah. That's the move.
Yeah.
That's the move.
Yeah.
I want more random crap that I can figure out how to use without actually knowing how to use it.
Yeah.
It'd be great.
Well, Tom Lamb, I'm really glad you made this record. Three Cheers for Vulnerability. It will be out on June 3rd, produced by Taylor Tatch.
Right on. Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Thanks for letting me talk to you.
Did you get the Todd Pipes to master?
Yeah,
the whole team.
Yeah, Todd did the master. Yeah, very much a very similar process to the last one. And honestly, I think I'll do it again. I mean, we haven't started on another one, but I think I'll do it again. I've got to have projects or my brain will bite me.
I listened to this weird interview with one of the dudes from Def Leppard the other day, and they said this record was the first record they ever made, like, you know, just sending tracks to each other, and they're never going to go back to the studio again. Like, they're so happy. They can do shit with their kids. They can work when they fucking want and are inspired.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and
they
I mean,
have to
there's
wait
a pressure
for anyone to do anything.
Yeah. And there's a pressure relief. Like, I mean, every time I've been in the studio tracking on somebody else's dime, I'm bugging out. Like, you know, growing up in the Catholic house with the guilt or whatever, it doesn't allow you to like take any swings, or it doesn't allow me to take any swings to like find something cool.
Right.
So anyway, and that's not an indictment on anyone that owns a studio or anything like that.
No,
that's,
not at all. Not at all.
Yeah. Right on. I think some people are just built for it and some people aren't. And I don't know that I'm built for it. I think I need to have my space.
Well, you definitely work well with your space.
Thanks, bro.
Everyone should get out there and check out Neutral on Paul. Three cheers for vulnerability. What's your website? Is it neutralandpaul.com?
You got it. Yes, sir.
Okay. Neutralandpaul.com. Get out there. Check it out. Dude, great talking to you again, Tom.
You too, man. Yeah. Good to see you.
Take care. And thanks again for coming to that show. That's a very flattering thing.
Heck yeah, man. Thanks, you do brother. It again, I'll come out. All right, man.
If you do it, I'll come out.
Oh, that's sweet of you.
Yeah.
All right.
It's cool. A deal. Bye, buddy.
Good to see you, dude. Later, buddy. Color and light.
Give us that was Tom Lamb from the project Neutral on Paul. Their brand new album, Three Cheers for Vulnerability, comes out June 3rd. Produced by Taylor Hatch. Fantastic. Taylor Tatch. Fantastic fucking record. Get out there and check out the singles Colored Light and Three Cheers for Vulnerability. Available now. The record drops on June 3rd. Find them at neutralonpaul.com. All right, let's talk to Greg Gonzalez from Grupo Fantasma, who has a big show coming up next Friday, May 27th. The Paramount Theater presents Grupo Fantasma featuring Joe Batan. Go to GrupoFantasma.com for all of your Grupo Fantasma needs. The doors are at 7. There's a cocktail hour at 7, and there's a show at 8. They have a really great DJ guy playing, whose name I wrote down, but I don't know where I wrote it down on here. Hector Gallegos. He's the DJ guy. He'll be playing at the party, and he'll be playing in between the sets. Joe Batan is a fantastic, fantastic artist. I suggest that you get out there and look him up. I'll put a link to his Spotify stuff in the text of this podcast, so you can just go right there. As I said, Greg and I have a great, great conversation. We actually did it right here in this backyard last week over Zoom. I was sitting at a different table. My grandma has multiple tables out here. You can choose where you want to sit. There's like a living room area, and then there's like a table over in a corner, and then there's a table like out in the middle. It's all very nice out here. Anyway, always a great conversation with Greg Gonzalez, and I always learn so much. I think we all do. You guys and me. Together, we learn from Greg Gonzalez. We're going to learn all about Joe Batan and what brought Grupo Fantasma to collaborate with such a great legendary artist. As I said, find them at GrupoFantasma.com. Go to their show next Friday, May 27th at the Paramount Theater. And without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Greg Gonzalez from Grupo Fantasma. Let's get down. You got a lot cuter.
that's my new dog.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, my other dog, we lost him in August.
Oh.
It's a long story. This guy came along at the same time.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, are you sitting outside?
I'm sitting outside. I'm at my grandma's house in Houston. That's why we're not doing this at my place. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. Here, let me turn you up a hair.
My aunt and I were listening to Joe Batan today when I was prepping for this, and then I turned her on to Money Chicha, and like she's got a whole list of your bands now. She's like, who are these people? Right. It's like, yeah, they're kind of, you're almost like a regular on the show now. You're like a twice a year guy.
I'm like, what can I tell you that I haven't already said?
Well, the one thing about it, and I was telling her this, and this seems to be the thing that happens when we talk, is that I always get an education of some sort, so I'm sure the audience does, you know, as well. On some artists, last time, remember you came on, you were doing the, you actually came on twice to talk about it with,
Jose Carballo.
Yeah. And now you got Joe Batan coming down, and I learned about a whole new artist. And I suggest, I know there's albums to go through, but when I put on the anthology thing that of his that came out in the early 70s seems to be a pretty good grasp of a magical, it's a good intro to that guy.
For sure.
Yeah. Well,
one of my favorite albums of his is called Call My Name. Uh-huh. I think it's a reissue. So I don't know if that was on there, because it came out on Munster Records, which is, you know, the parent company of Vampy Soul, the company that put out Money Chicha's albums.
Right.
From Spain. And my friend DJ Bongohead, a.k.a. Pablo Iglesias, I don't know if he, like, curated or handled the reissue somehow, but I came across that one, and that was, like, the one that really sold me on Joe. Not that I needed too much selling at that point, but that was the one that really, like, hit the nail on the head for me. Unfortunately, he doesn't really do those songs as much as I would like.
Yeah.
But that one was, like, really heavy on the Latin funk kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But he has, like, a really, you know, diverse discography. You know, his sound is really unique, and that's really what drew me to him. Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know how much you know about his backstory or anything like that.
I read the thing, and it's pretty awesome, but let's talk about it.
Sure. So Joe Baton is that's not his real name. His real name, I think, is Joe Nidolino. But he's a Afro-Filipino guy from Spanish Harlem,
right.
New York. And I guess in the 50s and 60s, when he was coming up, he ran with all of the Puerto Rican gangs.
Yeah.
Like literally in the gangs. And he ended up getting incarcerated for who knows what involved with the gangs. And while he was incarcerated, he kind of made a vow, like, you know, I don't want to go back into that. So he was like, I'm going to focus on music, you know. And so he put together a band of these like Puerto Rican street kids and was like, let's play some music. And, you know, they were all into, you know, of course, like the early formative years of salsa. But Joe was into like doo-wop and he was into
right.
R&B,
right.
You know, so those two things kind of came together, and sort of the initial form was like what's now known as Boogaloo, which was popular at the time with characters like, you know, Joe Cuba.
Right.
You know, and a few other cats. He's actually featured in a documentary called We Like It Like That, which is like the history of Boogaloo. So Joe puts together this band, and the way he said it, he was like, yeah, I was a bunch of 13 and 14-year-olds, and me, I was like 19, and I was trying to sell them on this 10-year plan. And they recorded a song, Gypsy Woman, and it went on to be a hit. So he was like, you know, what was supposed to take 10 years took 6 months. And he had a career all of a sudden. The funny thing is, though, when he told me the story about it briefly, the band was made up of like these guys who ended up being legends, you know, guys like Willie Colon.
Right, right.
Bobby Valentin, you know, a couple members of the Fania All-Stars. But they were like 14-year-old kids at the time, you know, just learning their instruments.
Right.
So these guys went on to be like legends of the salsa genre. But at the time they were, you know, as raw as they come playing with Joe. And so from there, his career took off, you know, and he made a career out of like blending styles. You know, he wasn't Puerto Rican, obviously. So I guess he didn't have that or even a, you know, Latino. So he didn't have that like cultural connection to like Cuban music or Colombian music or, you know, Puerto Rican music or Dominican music that a lot of other salseros had. You know, his connection was like one degree removed. It was from hanging out with those guys in Spanish Harlem. So it was kind of more like just like his Spanish. It was something he learned on the streets.
Right.
And it's really amazing how he was able to like take all these different kinds of influences and distill them into unique styles of music again and again.
So unique.
I mean, they're all raw because he's not like a, you know, classically trained cat, and he's not originally from the source, you know, culture. So he really is like a New York sound. You know what I mean? It's
yeah.
like Boogaloo.
Totally, totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's even got some stuff that sounds like 70s cop show music.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, so he was one of the first signees to Fania Records at 19, you know, and so he was all excited to have a record deal, and he was putting out Boogaloo music and this kind of doo-wop sound that he had mixed with salsa, you know, and it was a really interesting take on it, 'cause, you know, again, he kind of blended like Brazilian sounds with it. He blended funk and R&B, but he felt that he was being shafted basically by Fania. You know, a lot of the artists there got a raw deal. You know, they were infamous. Jerry Masucci, the lawyer, founder of the record label, and to a lesser extent, our good past friend, Larry Harlow, who was kind of the staff arranger, were notorious for just kind of, you know, cranking out these artists and not really like nurturing their careers or giving them proper royalties and things like that. But Joe, being kind of a street dude, he was savvy enough to be like, you know what, you guys are playing me, I'm out. So he bailed on Fania and got together with a bunch of other people and started his own record label as one of the founders of the Salsoul album. You know, it's like S-A-L-S-O-U-L, which was a really big in the Latin funk department, because they started combining the kind of burgeoning disco scene with salsa music. So they would have, they had this thing called the Salsa Orchestra, which was like a huge orchestra with, like, you know, you think disco music has violins, it has horns and like a real orchestra. But then they also had like Latin percussion, congas,
bongo, right,
you know, timbales, all right, that kind of stuff. And they made a lot of really cool heavy funk and heavy disco. And he even like meddled in an early rap. He put out a song called Rappo Clappo. It was like, it predated Sugar Hill Gang.
Really?
The Message or whatever, by like three to 6 months. So it wasn't a hit, but it was definitely like, you know, part of that initial wave of rap music getting recorded, you know? And then from what I understood, he like retired from music and became kind of a counselor, helping people with rehabilitation who were, you know, incarcerated at the same place he was for a long time, you know, kind of giving back to the community.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And eventually when he retired, he was like, you know what? I miss music. I want to get back into music. And he started playing again kind of in the early 2000s, up until like, you know, I guess today.
Wow.
So a long career, a long arc there, and a lot going on, you know. He was brought to my attention by this DJ, Hector Gallegos, who's going to be spinning at our show at the Paramount on May 27th.
Okay.
Kind of before the show and between the sets and things. He's from San Antonio. And he hired me, I don't know, right before the pandemic in like 2019 to put together a band to back up Archie Bell.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
So how was that?
That was amazing. You know, it was awesome to just like pick a band to do that. You know, I got some of the guys from Money Chicha, our drummer, John Spies, of course, and our keyboardist, Peter. And then I got Josh Levy from Grupo Fantasma Brown out to play Barry Sax. And I got David Jimenez, tremendous guitar player, to play guitar. And it worked out great. You know, Archie was fun to work with. We played like, you know, 45 minutes of his hits. And, you know, it was this really cool event. They called it the Tighten Up Weekend.
Yeah.
Where it was just like a bunch of DJs doing record swaps and playing like vintage R&B and soul cuts from the Gulf Coast. And then Archie Bell was kind of like the headliner. And he came out and, you know, we played all those songs and stuff, which was really one of those full circle moments. You know, I remember being like 14 years old.
Yeah.
You know, playing Led Zeppelin or whatever. And the guitar player I was playing with at the time, Luis Llamas, was like, hey, man, do you know this song? It's got a really cool groove. And it was Tighten Up by Archie Bell, you know? So I was like 14 in my mom's garage playing Tighten Up, the bass line. So cool. And here I am, you know.
Really playing it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, playing it with the guy who wrote it, you know. I even talked to my dad about it, and he was like, oh, I saw him when I was on shore leave from the military. You know, I was stationed, and, you know, I had a weekend off. We went down to the convention center in Corpus Christi and watched Archie Bell play. He was the headliner, and the opening act was Steppenwolf. And I was like,
oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So, you know, it was pretty cool. But anyways, I digress. I was talking to Hector afterwards, and he was like, hey, man, could you put together a band to back up Joe Bataan? I was like, Joe Bataan? Like, what do you mean? Is that dude still playing? He's like, yeah, man, he's still out there playing. I got his contact info, you know? And I was like, well, I don't need to put together a band. I got that band.
Yeah,
and he was like, well, here, man, here's the details. You take it over. I don't know how to do this. I'm a DJ. You know, he was like, I just want to see this happen, you know?
And you're no stranger to this because you did that Kabbalah show last year. You know what I mean? Is this Is this part of your...
Well, I mean, part of Asthma and Brownout have done this kind of thing a lot. You know, Brownout backed up Bernie Worrell and GZA from Wu-Tang Clan, and Grupo Fantasma's backed up, you know,
Prince.
Larry Harlow, Daniel, of course, Prince, you know, even Daniel Johnston. You know, it's one of those things that we take pleasure in. It's like getting pushed out of our comfort zones,
yeah,
learning from these masters and kind of being, you know, I see us as sort of like bearers of that torch, you know, those
right
big band, live band sound that just there's not really people doing it anymore, you know? So to hear those sounds carried on, or to even like stretch ourselves and interpret stuff that wasn't meant to be played like that, you know, playing Black Sabbath music or playing Public Enemy music or Wu-Tang Clan music or whatever.
Yeah. I was going to ask you if you felt like that was kind of part of your part of your work, you know, like part of your mission. Not just you, but the rest of the guys is kind of like, hey, we're going to stay connected to what was ahead of us and what's coming up behind us in like an actual physical way. Stay connected.
Right. Well, for me, it's intentional. I can't speak for everyone else. For some people, it's probably just a gig, depending on who the band is or the artist that we're dealing with. You know, for some, it's like, oh, man, I'm a fan of this. You know, like, for instance, with Prince, obviously, that was somebody everybody in the band felt connected to. But then others, we'd play like GZA, and the horn players would be like, what is this?
You know? Right.
They're not known for listening to hip hop so much or whatever, you know, not to diss anybody here. But you get the point. Like, it means something different to everybody else. But for me personally, speaking on my own behalf, I feel like as we become older and kind of like the, you know, we see ourselves as like ambassadors of Austin music. You know, we actually got named that at one point in 2019 when we went to Russia. But, you know, it's all about connecting our scene to other people's scene, introducing music that's inspired us to younger people or to people who might not be aware of it. And just kind of building those bridges and making those connections, you know, because a lot of these artists, you know, as you get older, you think to yourself, like, how am I going to be relevant when I'm 60 or 70?
Exactly.
I'm going to think about my band, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not 60 or 70, but I'm old enough that, like, for instance, the other day I was getting a personal trainer with my wife. You know, we were doing a exercise workout at the YMCA, and this guy who was working us out was like, hey, man, my uncle tells me that I was in a play with you when I was 4 years old. Your band was playing. I was like, what? He was like, yeah, the Pastorela. And I was like, oh, man, that takes me back. That was like one of the first things I did in Austin was, you know, with my band, The Blimp, which later became Grupo Fantasma and all these other bands. You know, we played the music for a Christmas pageant, I guess you would call it. It was like a play or performance community theater called the Pastorela at the old Max Center, which was originally just like a big, you know, leaky warehouse on right off Rainy Street where the new fancy Max Center is. And, you know, he was like 4 years old in the play. They had like some kids who would like march out singing a song at the beginning. And now here he is showing me how to do deadlifts. So.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
In a weird way.
Anyway.
So, sorry. I want to talk about this show a little bit more. It's at the Paramount Theater Friday, May 27th. Doors are at 7. And there's a member cocktail hour at 7. That means members of the theater organization?
Yeah. And the DJ I was talking about, Hector Gallegos, he's going to be spinning before and after. So people who get there early can listen to some music, you know, mingle and whatnot. If they so desire, they can just show up for the show if that's what they're into as well. Also on the bill is Eddie and the Valiants, which is a band from San Antonio that plays Brown Eyed Soul, kind of like funk and R&B, that sound. I don't know how to describe it, except it was basically like the sound of, like, you know, kind of lowrider Chicano kids.
Awesome.
Back in the 60s and 70s, you know, singing doo-wop and playing like R&B music, you know.
So, yeah.
They're awesome too.
That was the one thing that I was noticing in Joe Button's music was that it wasn't a matter of the doo-wop backing vocal stuff, but his melody choices, like on his first record, were very doo-wop melodies. You know, like You Send Me and this kind of thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. You can definitely hear all that influence in his sound. I mean, it takes me back to like every time I hear a song, I hear like a reference to another song that I remember my parents listening to, like oldies when I was a kid, you know,
right,
driving around in the car or whatever. And it reminds me of those little hooks and those little phrases, the little scoops and bends and stuff like that.
Right.
And like I said, he's not a academically trained musician, what have you. He's like from the streets, and you can hear it in his sound. There's that roughness.
Yeah.
There's that kind of, you know, attitude. It really reminds me of that like lowrider scene, you know, the Pachuco kind of scene out in California in the 60s and 70s. They were all about that doo-wop sound. They were all about that soulful, smooth sound, you know?
Right. A couple of questions that I wanted to ask earlier was he playing music before, like when he was in a gang, was he a musician or was he was just lived doing the streets thing? Did he learn music in prison or did he learn it after? Or did he just decide like, this is something I can kind of do. Let me just do that and get out of trouble.
I'm not sure to what extent, you know, I know he sang before that, you know, and that was like a thing that they would do. They would like stand on street corners and sing.
Right.
It was like that era, you know, but it wasn't like studied. It's not like, I don't think he was like in choir in school or anything, although
no. He
might've been, I haven't asked him, you know. I know that he plays piano now, and that's like a big part of his thing is he, you know, writes on the piano while he sings. So at some point he picked that up.
So what are you guys performing with him? Like stuff from his whole career?
Yeah, essentially. Again, like the choices of what he likes to play now are a little bit different than the stuff he was probably playing in the 70s. You know, he's a lot more chill and retrospective. And but he still plays a lot of the hits, the Boogaloo stuff like Gypsy Woman, mm-hmm, and songs like Under the Street Lamp, you know, a lot of those kind of soulful hits. So, yeah, you know, kind of all over the catalog. There's a lot more of the kind of like, you know, like I said, he's got stories to tell and stuff. And that's kind of his approach, I think, is like coming out and breaking bread, you know, sonically with people and bringing them all together. You know, he really feels like it's his mission to like bring peace to people who hear his sound,
yeah,
to improve their days and their lives and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
And I think more than anything, he just enjoys it at this point. You know, he's reached that phase of his life where it's not like, oh, I got to make a career and stress about this or whatever.
Right.
Or prove something, you know, his legacy is already set. You know, he's just about sharing his experience with other people. It's really wild, you know, like especially when you hear his lyrics, they seem so innocent, you know, they're from that era, you know, the kind of, I guess like 50s and 60s, you know, there wasn't no cursing, there wasn't like,
right,
all that kind of stuff. It was very kind of wholesome in,
yeah,
a way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I think it was probably for him growing up the way he did, you know, running with the gangs and stuff, like that wholesome thing was probably something you aspired to, you know,
yeah,
when you're like having to deal with all kinds of crazy stuff and you don't got a bunch of money and you're like out running with gangs and shit. You're probably like, man, I would love to have a wholesome experience with just like, you know, a girl in a nice car,
right,
a safe house to go to, you know, and like,
yeah,
just chilling out,
yeah,
watching a movie for a dollar or whatever kind of stuff they did back then. So it kind of makes sense. Like, you know, people who grew up comfortably glorify the struggle, but you know, people who grow up in that struggle, they glorify the calm, the peace that,
right,
that they aspire to.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny. I always, I equate the sound of somebody going mad more with, the Beach Boys, Wouldn't It Be Nice, than I do with some kind of like death metal record. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because by the time you're trying to soothe yourself with music, you've crossed some kind of line with, with
no
darkness,
doubt,
you know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Do you see, have you guys, like, how does this work when he comes in? Does he come in a few days before and you guys rehearse or, like?
He's coming in, on the Wednesday night before, you know, so he has time to chill out and yeah. kind of see the sun and stuff. Then that Thursday of the night before the show, we're going to have a long rehearsal that day, I guess, and go over everything. We've been rehearsing the music for about a month now, once a week, just getting together and learning the songs. So we'll get together and see what kind of changes he has, because, you know, from what I understand, he doesn't play all the songs the way he recorded them anymore. Or maybe
right.
some of the keys might be different and stuff like that. So we're going to have to adjust. And then the Friday of, we're doing a live performance on KUTX with him, which will be great to get it filmed and documented, you know. And then that night we're doing the show at the Paramount. So that's basically where we're at.
People can get tickets at tickets.austintheater.org/Grupo Fantasma. Don't look for tickets for these shows on other sites, because they're like $500. You know what I mean?
Are you serious?
I don't know if these in particular, but every time someone's coming to town, I'm like, man, I was thinking about going to see them, but it's $600 to go see. And they're like, no, dude, you're not looking. Those sites always come up on Google before the actual site itself.
The resellers.
So tickets.austintheater.org, and that's theater R-E.
Yeah, I think there's also a link in our bio on Instagram too. At Grupo Fantasma on Instagram. And if you go to the bio, there should be a link directly to the ticket site as well.
Yeah.
That's easy.
What happens after this show? What are you currently working on?
Well, I'm currently in graduate school, but this is my last semester.
Oh, yeah. You were doing that for a while.
Yeah, I'm almost done. I'm just producing one more event. It's like an immersive theater performance, I guess. The Texas Immersive Institute, which I'm part of it, the university has partnered with a company from South Korea called Zepeto. It's like a large virtual world online where people have like avatars and they interact and dress them up and things. So they hired us to create custom clothing assets for these characters and to dress them and then to create our own, you know, in reality world using those characters. It's a little bit much to wrap your head around until you experience it.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Like we created a whole kind of theater experience where you interact with like virtual beings and also actors. I created a whole soundscape for it. I composed some music and sounds. And it's going to be really awesome. That's happening. You know, I don't know if it'll be happening before this comes out, probably on May 13th and 14th at Dada Lab.
Okay.
East Austin. But after that's done, I'm done. I'll be a master of the arts.
Congratulations, man.
Thanks. Yeah. My goal is to savor it for a minute and then make my next move. But, you know, the band's all got stuff going on. We're doing a fly out to Utah and a drive out to New Mexico to play it in Roswell and Santa Fe. Then playing Blues on the Green.
Oh, great.
In June. Yeah. And Money Chicha's opening, ironically. So I'll be doing double duty. But that's going to be awesome. We're going to have a bunch of guest artists for that to kind of showcase the diversity of Austin music. And then after that, I think it opens up a little bit in July. Before August, we have some flyouts. We're playing like Telluride Jazz Festival. We're playing a festival up in Oregon. A couple other little festy flyouts and stuff in October.
That's great, man.
We're playing Utopia Fest with Charlie Tuna from Jurassic 5. So, you know, there's little things here and there. Obviously, my school work has kind of kept me from pursuing this heavy duty lately. But once I'm done, we'll see what happens next.
Yeah. Well, I wish you luck. I'm sure whatever you do is going to be great. I know that sounds cliche, but I really, I always appreciate our talks a lot. I always learn a lot. You're a really patient teacher. And you explain things really well. So, gang, Grupo Fantasma, the Paramount Theater presents Grupo Fantasma featuring Joe Batan, Friday, May 27th. Of course, the Paramount Theater, doors at 7, member cocktail hour at 7, and show at 8. And Eddie and the Valiants open, and Hector Gallegos will be doing DJ sets in between the sets and for the cocktail hour.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, man. Well, dude, it's been great talking to you, and I'm going to try. I'm actually off next Friday. If I'm not back here in Houston, I will, I'll come out there.
Is that next Friday or the Friday after?
No, the Friday after. Sorry. This will be coming out next Friday, so I was talking like it's the time.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I was like, but next Friday I'm graduating.
Yeah, and congratulations, man.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, man, I'm gonna try and bring my aunt to that Blues on the Green show in June. That sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
No doubt.
Yeah, man.
We've done it, I think, twice now. So this time we're bringing all of our friends and making it more of like a, you know, family picnic.
Well, good, man. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it'll be a good time.
Yeah, Greg. Dude, always great talking to you. Thanks for doing the show again.
My pleasure.
Have a good one. You too, buddy. That's Greg Gonzalez from Grupo Fantasma. Find them at GrupoFantasma.com. See them next Friday. The Paramount Theater presents Grupo Fantasma featuring Joe Batan. Doors at 7, cocktail hour party at 7, and show at 8 with special guest Hector Gallegas doing a DJ set. Fantastic, right? And don't forget to check out Neutral on Paul's new album, Three Cheers for Vulnerability, dropping June 3rd. Go to NeutralOnPaul.com for all of your Neutral on Paul needs. Always great talking to these guys. They're fantastic artists, fantastic musicians. And yeah, I hope you have a great, great weekend. Whatever it is you're doing this weekend, I'll be in Houston playing a couple shows with Skyrocket. And then staying here for the week, hanging with the grandma, all right? Think good thoughts for her, if you will, on my behalf. I would enjoy that. I would appreciate that is what I mean. So thank you so much for listening. Have a great weekend. Be safe. Get out there and check out Neutral on Paul. Get out there and check out Grupo Fantasma. Have a great weekend. I'm thinking about you. Let's get down.